Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. I hope you all are doing well as we bring you yet another episode of the show. And this is a pre-recorded interview with our guest today, but we're really excited to have him aboard because we're talking a little bit about the science side of FSHD. And, you bring in your chief science officer is what you do when you want to talk about that. Really quickly, though, if you want to get in contact with me, you can. Even though it's pre-recorded, I might even be chatting along here with you via Facebook and YouTube, which is where you can find the shows that are airing live. The second, I believe, or was it third Tuesday? Well, you can find it all on FSHD Society Radio Show when we do broadcast these live for you to see. You can also contact me, like I mentioned, at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. And, of course, take time to thank our sponsors, Perkin Elmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapies, for making this show and all that encompasses it possible. So let's bring in our guest. His name is Jamshid Arjamand, and he is the Chief Science Officer for the FSHD Society, and we welcome him now. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me. I hope you're doing well as well.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Love taking some time to talk with you. I think, when's the last time we chatted? Maybe it was, I know we chatted a little bit before we hit record, but there was, was it like the telethon? What was it?
I think it was, may have been the telethon.
Yeah. And you have this, you have this great last name. I know this is total like segue here really quick. You have a phenomenal last name to actually get a nice baritone role, you know, Arjamand. You know what I mean? You can really play with it. It's fun. I almost had a separate intro for you. And I know that they're talking about, you know, making a special segment maybe going forward, jamming with Jamshid. I mean, I started to produce something. Hey, maybe next time. Just be aware.
I've heard some of those.
Have you? Oh, it was so much fun. It was so much fun to make. I was like, man, this is great.
Thank you so much.
So thanks. Yeah. Thanks for being here and sharing some of your knowledge with us. We know that you have a great sense of humor that you can play along with all those silly things I just brought up. But tell us more a little bit about your background, kind of maybe your career life, you know, before FSHD Society.
I'd be happy to. Sure. So I did my undergraduate at UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. I double majored in molecular biology and psychology, and worked for a couple years before going to graduate school because I really wanted to figure out what I wanted to do graduate school wise. So I worked at a research institute in the neuropathology division, and then decided to do neuroscience as for my graduate degree, and I moved to UCLA, and I was very interested in neuroimmune interactions. Worked there for a number of years. I really like integrating different fields scientifically. If I had to do it over again, I don't know if I would do that path because neuroscience, the study of the brain, is very complicated. Immunology is by itself very complicated, and when you try to merge the two, it's very, very difficult to understand. And so it was a challenge to get through graduate school, but I'm glad I did this. I learned a lot that by interacting with different groups that do different type of science, that the collaborative space, that inner space between the different fields is where a lot of very exciting things can happen. So for instance, I don't have any experience with this, but for instance, bioengineering, you have biologists and computational biologists or engineers working together, and they can do some really amazing things.
Yeah.
So really been fascinated by that. My graduate work took a little bit, took a while to get through because it was challenging, but then I decided to see what was available outside of academia, as usually a career follows that you get a postdoc and then you get assistant professorship. And I just wanted to see what was available outside. So I joined a pharmaceutical company for a couple of years and worked on pain management and discovering pathways to control pain. And after that, I went and I transitioned to a nonprofit sector, and I worked at a nonprofit group working on Huntington's disease for about 9 years. And there I learned a lot of very interesting things about working with different groups. So both basic research, pharmaceutical companies, contract research organizations, and the foundation that I was working with had was almost like a virtual biotech company. So we had all the elements that you would find in a pharmaceutical company, and I got to interact with my colleagues and learn a little bit of what they do as well. So that was very useful. And after 9 years, I joined a startup biotech company that was using stem cell technologies to model different diseases. We both provided services, but we also decided that our platform was so user-friendly that we decided that it'd be silly if we didn't try to do some of our own drug discovery using the models that we were creating. And one of the models that we had created was from stem cells was a skeletal muscle. And one of the programs we started working on was actually FSHD. And so we had a program on FSHD. As most biotechs go, it's very challenging to go from a service model to a discovery model. You need a lot of funding for that. And our parent company was and transitioned and was purchased by a conglomerate that wasn't really interested in pursuing drug discovery. We were a small division of a larger company. So, and since I'd been working with FSHD and I already knew a lot of the researchers and I knew the field, I also knew the FSHD Society. It became a very and they were looking for someone. It just seemed like a perfect fit. I could continue working on FSHD. It was bringing me back to that nonprofit sector where I had spent a large amount of my career, 9 years in the nonprofit sector. And I really liked being in that space because as a nonprofit, you get to interact with everyone. Your drive really is trying to find a therapy to help the patient community. So you're that, that's the only motivation to be working at a nonprofit, which is great. And you get to work with everyone and you get to talk to everyone. So very smart scientists, brilliant clinicians, the patient community as well. You get to speak with the regulatory agencies and learn what they need. And everybody is, they're not competing against us. And they hopefully will see us as enablers and helping them. And so it's a really fantastic place to be.
Wow. That's a great path to have you find your way to us. I mean, this is pretty fascinating that you were kind of touching on it a little bit within that biotech side of things with stem cell. So then how did that first introduction to the FSHD Society go? I mean, did like Jun Kinoshita or Mark Stone just like, call you up? Did they take you out to dinner to get you a nice meal? I mean, did they really kind of woo you in?
I actually got to know the FSHD Society earlier on. I think when I was part of the biotech company, because I met with Dan at a meeting and we were talking about Dan Perez. So I had gotten to know him. I also knew June. As a small biotech company, I wrote grants to the FSHD Society as well as to some of the other organizations like Friends of FSH Research, because as a small company, getting a little bit of seed funding from a specialized nonprofit carries a lot of weight, especially with a board of directors that we're on the right path. And so if you can get a little bit of funding from an organization, usually the board of directors from the company will approve, funding the rest of the program and supporting us. So we were in very close contact with with all of the organizations and with a lot of the researchers as well, trying to learn from them, set up collaborations with them. So I think we met. Mark had may have just joined the FS. Mark Stone, the CEO and president, had joined. I think one of his first tasks is with June. They traveled around the country and the globe, and they met with all of the groups that were actively involved in FSHD therapeutic development. And so we met with them at that point, and I got to know Mark a little bit, and so that's how the relationship developed.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad it did. I'm glad it did, and obviously it went well. So, and here we are, right? We fast forward a little bit to where we have you going to work for all the people. I know that I can almost hear, you know, questions pouring through those, you know, listening, you know, and excited, especially when we talk about the science, because science means treatment. Science is where it's at. That's what we're trying to fund and help and push for. That's how we do the walk and rolls, right? That's what it's about. There's some goals, I'm sure, that were laid out in front of you to try to reach when you took on the position. And correct me if I'm, you know, wrong with one of them, and that was like a therapeutic accelerator project, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm happy to expand on that. Actually, that was one of the major selling points, I think, that really got me excited about joining the society. Mark and June had been trying to think about how can the society have the biggest impact possible to help therapeutic development. And Mark and June both have had experience. They've worked with different groups. June's been with the society for 9 or plus more years. She's been here a long time. And so there's different ways, and it really, the ways that you can help advance therapeutic development really varies by how much is known scientifically about a disease. So for a very rare disease where nothing is known about it, what a group can do and be very effective is by raising funding and just funding a couple of academic labs to study it and learn a little bit about the basics of the disease goes a long way. Because if we don't know anything about the basic disease, it's very difficult to think of strategies to stop it. So the society, I think initially with Dan Perez at the helm, funded a lot of very basic research, and the gene was found, and I think there was a lot that was discovered over quite a span, and some great researchers did some major discoveries, and they found out that DUX4 is really at the crux of the disease, and it's the toxic gene in FSH. So when Mark came and with June, I think they were thinking, okay, we know this, how can we help the drug developers? And in practical sense, most of the drug developers are pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies and pharmaceutical. What tools are they going to need?
Yeah.
And Mark says it very eloquently in presentations that I've seen him give, that the road to from basic research to clinical trial has obstacles in it. And every disease has to travel the same road, but every disease therapeutic strategy will have different obstacles in its path.
Okay.
So what Mark wanted to do was, what are the obstacles that are facing FSHD therapeutic development? Let's identify those, and then let's see what can we put together, how can we help solve those problems, and how can we reduce those barriers so every drug company that's in the space will have an easier path to bringing their therapeutic through a clinical trial and hopefully get it approved. And so I really like that strategy because we're not trying to develop our own drugs. We're not trying to compete with the pharmaceutical companies. We're just trying to reduce the, these obstacles and trying to address them. And everybody, all the pharmaceutical companies have an interest in having these obstacles reduced because if we don't do it as a group, but they're going to have to do it on their own.
Right.
And those are resources. It takes time. It takes a lot of effort to address every one of those. And some companies may actually drop a program. They may be interested in working on FSHD, but they'll see, well, there's too many obstacles here. So we're just going to put this on the back burner and focus our energies somewhere else. And we don't want that to happen either. So very early on, I think it was about a month after I joined, June and Mark had organized a meeting in Maryland, and they called it the Industry Collaborative Meeting, and they had invited all of the pharmaceutical biotech companies that were either working in the space or interested in the in FSHD or neuromuscular indications. They not only invited those companies, but they also invited a lot of the regulatory agencies, and as well as clinicians and you know, a few key opinion leaders and scientific minds that really helped shape the field. And the question was very simple, is what are the perceived obstacles for therapeutic development? And so, and these basically became the initiatives that we are now focusing on and trying to solve. And we're trying to do this in collaboration with all of the groups that are working in the space, because they all have a mutual interest in seeing them resolved. So, and then we learned a lot of new things along the way as well. So for instance, it was the regulatory agencies that told us that it's really important for the FDA to hear from the patient community as to what it is that they need and how the disease is affecting them. Because even though the FDA is filled with very smart scientists and clinicians, they don't have expertise in all of the different disease areas. And one of the risks is if they don't know anything about FSHD, is they may think that, well, we're going to I'm going to use the knowledge that I know about Duchenne's muscular dystrophy or limb-girdle muscular dystrophy, and I'm going to apply the same criteria to FSHD, and those may not be directly applicable. And that basically was the impetus that we needed to really set up this Voice of the Patient meeting that was held virtually last year in June. And so many of the patient community actually participated and not only answered surveys, but also participated during the live event, as well as send in their comment afterwards. We received a lot of comments. So June and a couple other people helped compile that into a report that was then sent to the FDA. And now it becomes the basically the starting point for the regulatory agencies when they want to, if they have a program to review on FSHD, that's what they're going to go. They're going to pull that report out. They're going to learn about the disease, what's important, and then they can better evaluate whether a therapy is addressing those needs.
So it sounds like all the pieces needed to kind of come together. Yeah. And Voice of the Patient was one of those huge pieces, and how important that report is.
Absolutely. And that was something that we were planning to do. And then when COVID hit, we were thinking, all right, now what? And we actually were able to pull this off in virtually. And my understanding is that it went so well that we heard from our, we had some consultants that helped us with this project. The FDA kind of told them that this is the Voice of the Patient meeting for the FSHD actually became the gold standard. And that's what was other groups, so other rare disease groups that were trying to run theirs, they could kind of model theirs after ours.
Yeah.
So that was really great to hear. And there was a lot of effort from a lot of people to make that happen. And I'm not taking credit for any of it, because June really did most of it.
Yeah, it was... I was a part of that, and then knowing the feedback, like you said, was, I mean, it almost gave you chills, right? To say that all that hard work that June and so many people there put into it, then it became the gold standard. I mean, that's like hitting it out of the park. I'm a baseball coach, so I'm going to throw that in there. And yeah, I mean, that's just perfect, right? I mean, what more could you ask for all that? So having, you know, we all fundraise hard and we help out with, if it's Voice of the Patient, other things we have to do. There's been also the cry out, right, for patients to get involved when it comes to, you know, studies and those kinds of things. How valuable is that even still, or even now? I mean, do we still need more people to get involved? You know, now with COVID kind of in some areas going down a little bit, maybe people are possibly looking to help again. You know, maybe there was a lull. Is there still a need for patient participation from what you've heard?
Oh, absolutely. And there's new studies that are going to launch. There are so as you know, the Clinical Trial Research Network was running a fairly large observational study called RESOLVE to look at a lot of outcome measures over time. Those studies, I think they're pretty much completed with recruitment, and they are now maybe some of the sites are actually completing the 2-year study. That is now transitioning into a new study called MOVE, FSHD. So it's the all of the sites that were involved in Resolve are now starting to recruit for MOVE. So absolutely, it's that's really important because not only does it give a since I think the anticipation is that some of the Resolve participants are going to continue on with MOVE, and so then instead of having a year or 18 months, or I'm sorry, Resolve was 18 months or 2 years, I don't exactly remember, but now we're going to possibly get continuation longer evaluation, and this is using some of the latest clinical tools to see how the disease really is progressing. So it gives us a better understanding of disease progression in a larger population. But then I believe that there are some imaging studies that are about to start, as well as there are quite a few clinical studies that are being planned that are on the shorter horizon. So probably end of the year, early next year.
That's what I was
So
gonna
participation in those is going to be really important. And we're still learning a lot about the disease and the heterogeneity of it. So participation in just the annual registry is also really
Mm.
important. And we can learn a lot from that.
You mentioned some studies that sounded like to do with imaging. I know we've talked about, I think, in the past episodes multiple times about how important, MRI is starting to become. You find that to be also just as important or some part of the breakthrough of learning more about this?
Absolutely, and there are imaging can fall into several different categories. But right now, it's first of it's possibly maybe a little expensive, but it's a really great tech, non-invasive technique that gives an overview in the entire body. I mean, it's a whole body imaging study. It can give an overview on what's happening throughout the body on all the musculature. And there's some really amazing technologies that are being developed that use AI to segment the muscles. So in the past, as a neuroscientist, I participated in a couple of these studies where somebody had to actually they scan your brain, and then somebody has to manually trace the different parts of the brain. And that's really time intensive to do. And the same thing is with muscles. Once somebody is scanned, typically somebody has to delineate where each muscle is so they can be measured. But now with better computer systems and artificial intelligence, that part of it can be automated. So you can actually get a lot more measures throughout the body. That's really powerful because then you can correlate that with maybe some outcome measure. And so I think there was a study that was presented by Fulcrum that was quite interesting, where they showed patients with the same clinical severity score had vastly different muscles that were involved. So even though they score the same as far as progression, different areas were being affected. So if you're trying to run a clinical trial and your outcome measure is, let's say, something that's using the legs, but in one patient the legs aren't as affected as the upper body, that's not going to score well, and it's going to throw the results of the study out. So that's how imaging can be used at the beginning of a clinical trial. So you group patients that are more similar to each other, so you can use the same test. So you can use it as a screening tool, or it can be used possibly as a biomarker because it's been shown that changes in imaging usually precede changes, functional changes. And so if you can see a change in imaging, maybe you don't have to wait until you see a change in clinical outcome. And you can maybe use that as a surrogate endpoint in a clinical trial. And that would shorten the time of a clinical trial.
Well, that sounds like a good thing, right? Shorten that time up and then
That
we're
would be
moving
a good
forward,
thing.
right? Faster. Yeah. That's a lot of the time consuming part of this. I know that there was some people that probably got excited. I know FSHD Society posted on it, and I know this is not exactly, you know, pinpointing right in your area of expertise within it, but I couldn't help but kind of at least touch on it briefly about, you know, Fulcrum talking about the fast track designation of their drug, which maybe you can pronounce the drug better than I can. Losmapimod, right? No? Am I close?
Right.
All right. So, yeah. I mean, okay, I see from a patient standpoint, right? And I want you to hit it to me real here, right? And I know you're not going to try to spin it to be negative, but I need it to be real. So many people want that. We don't want to have some explanation, you know, where people are trying to fluff it up. But when I read fast track designation, I'm like, whoa, man, this is going to be great. That's really great news. But is it, I mean, is it really, I mean, what is the point in your understanding to help us understand maybe another level up of what does that really mean for, you know, drug?
Sure. And you're totally right. This is not my area of expertise. Yeah. So I will tell you the little bit that I understand.
Yeah.
This is part of the regulatory process, and in a disease where there are no treatments available, the drug sponsor, in this case Fulcrum, can apply to the FDA to have fast track designation.
Okay.
And so it's basically a request, and I don't know what the process is and what they have to submit, but the FDA will review it. And if there is no treatment, if it's there's an unmet medical need, they may choose to allow a clinical trial to be reviewed by the FDA faster than it normally takes.
Okay.
And I don't know what the actual process, but I think that the whole review process can sometimes take 6 months to a year. If you can reduce that and you get a lot more input from the FDA along the way, that's a really good thing.
Hmm.
It's a separate application from the clinical trial and the clinical trial study. As far as I know, they're not linked.
Yeah, they're not linked. Okay. That's good. I'm glad you spelled it out, because I know it probably got a lot of people, and I don't want to say false excitement. I mean, still, there's positive within it. We just have to understand to what degree or level. You know, nowhere did I read within that the cure is coming tomorrow. You know, it's not, it didn't make me feel like that, but, you know, at least there's some progress being made there. Within that, then, you know, progress, right? That's what most patients, families are looking for, or they ask about. And is there anything that you've seen, come across your desk, come across your radar within your role at the FSHD Society that excites you? If it's, you know, some type of study started or conversation or anything that you can share with the listener.
Wow. So, yes, quite a bit. So on the clinical side, I think what's been very exciting is there are a lot of companies that have active programs in FSHD, and they are. So as the research continues, people always think that drug discovery, and I did too for a long time, that you have the research, and then once the research gets to a point, then you start, you know, doing translational work, and then when that's done, you start thinking about clinical. That's not really in the real world how it happens. It's all kind of parallel.
Okay.
And so as research gets to a point, and the company thinks that there's a path forward, they deploy everything in parallel. So you have groups that are starting to look to design a clinical trial. You have groups that are looking for endpoints. You have groups that are doing the translational work. And that's been exciting because there's a number of companies that are going down that path. So
nice.
They're firmly committed. And unless something goes drastically wrong or there's a change maybe in their priorities, I think they're all seriously committed to bringing these treatments to the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very exciting. I think that the network, the Clinical Trial Research Network, and the way it's been operating with Resolve, that's very exciting. It's they're all using the same tools. So that becomes kind of a one-stop shop. When a company wants to run a clinical trial, they don't have to find all the clinics that have access to patients and that then get them all trained so they're using the same tool.
Right.
That network already exists.
That's beautiful.
So they can actually get their trial started. And to the credit of the CTRN, the way they're trying to set this up is if you can run multiple trials in parallel, there is some savings in participation that can be had. So, for instance, you can use the same control group of patients, and that reduces the number of participants and volunteers that you need for a trial. So that's pretty exciting.
That is.
From the scientific side, I think the imaging is very promising. There's also molecular biomarkers that are being developed, and that can be very exciting. So currently, to see if DUX4 itself is very difficult to measure, so scientists are looking at genes that are regulated by DUX4, and they measure those, and they've been doing this through muscle biopsies. And if there's a way to be able to measure those in the blood as opposed to the muscle, that would be also a huge advance. So it does two things. One is you don't have to have a needle biopsy. A blood draw is a lot less invasive. And the other thing is that the muscle biopsy is just reporting on that one single muscle that you're sampling. So if that muscle is not involved, you don't get a reading.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
But if you're getting it from the blood, that's kind of an average of all the muscles in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a better representation of what's happening, no matter where it is. If it's in the calf or leg or shoulder, if it's there and it's detectable, you would pick it up in the blood. So I think there are some groups that are doing some exciting work on that front. So if all of these things come together, I think, you know, if you have good imaging, like we mentioned, and you can use imaging at the front end to like group patients that are more similarly alike, in a clinical study, then there's a better chance that the study is actually going to give you results that are interpretable. Because when you if a study is not measuring the right thing, you never know if maybe the drug did work. You're just not measuring the right thing. So imaging may help with that. Having a biomarker that's in the blood that can be tracked could give you an early kind of indication as to, are you dosing the drug enough? Mm. Are you seeing a reduction or a change in the whatever it is that you're tracking in the blood? And that can give you some information on how much drug you need to give. So that could be very useful. And then having a good network to run the clinical trial becomes really important. And this is kind of on the more, my view, what I'm saying here is more geared towards the clinical development. There's also some very exciting research that's being done. That's discovery research, very innovative researchers. And unfortunately, there's a lot of those, and it's I can't go into all the details. They're developing those projects. So
yeah.
I don't want to give out their secrets and their ideas.
Oh, right. No, no. Yeah. Yeah. No, we want to keep that good. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. But there's more than one, so you're saying out there on that research side of it like that, right?
Oh, two things that the society is now doing is we've maintaining doing supporting clinical basic research.
Mm.
So because of COVID, we ramped that down. We only had one grant cycle.
Okay.
But this year we're going to have two. And
nice.
Last year, because we only had one grant cycle, we received the largest number of applications, and there were a lot of grants that really were really good. And our scientific advisory board that was reviewing them, basically they rank order them, and there were, I think, 10 grants that they thought should be granted. And typically, I think in a cycle, we get 10 or 15 applications, mm-hmm. three or four of them they think are very exciting and worth funding. Here we had 10. So we had, more than double the number.
Yeah.
And they varied, they were all over from, there were some research at the clinical level. There were some basic biology research. There were some genetic research. So it was really exciting.
Wow.
To see that.
That is exciting, man, to be a fly on the wall when you guys were all looking at those. That'd be kind of cool. Even though I probably wouldn't understand half of what I was reading, but I think I'd just be looking at the looks on all your faces like, okay, are they excited? Then we should be excited. This is good. Okay. So one of the final questions I had for you was, and this one kind of popped in my head when I was going through Like, what would I ask, you know, Jamshid to kind of get him going? What would be one of those final questions, you know? And I think that, you know, people have had a rough year with COVID, but now I think it's coming on the other side of it. And I think people are kind of geared up to get more involved. And so, but sometimes you might have some people that are tentative. How do I get back involved? Or how do I get going? Someone's got to fire him up, Jamshid. You know, they got to fire him up. They got to get him going. So let's say, you know, we're down by a goal, right? And you got to give a halftime speech to your team. So when they come busting out, they're ready to go. So, like, what is your raw speech for the listeners to get them involved, engaged, and going? I tried to buy enough time to kind of think of it there. Did you feel that? You know, kind of drag the question out. I know I'm putting you on the spot. That's why it's fun. That's why it's fun.
I wish I had coached a team so I would have had that experience. Oh. So, you know, I actually started because of COVID, and I haven't been able to traveling, and I've been really being hungry for interactions with people. Started joining some of the chapter meetings and just to meet people, because I think that normally I would meet them if I was traveling, but since I can't travel, I thought I would meet them virtually, and it's been fantastic. And I think that I've been very excited by just meeting people and hearing what, you know, their concerns are and what they're interested in. They're very motivated. So it inspires me. So I'm not, as opposed to giving you a speech of what I would tell other people, I'm telling you what inspires me.
Nice.
And that really motivates me to see that there are groups, you know, that are working together, either to put a talent show or some sort of fundraising together. But also, because it's all virtual, now you have different groups within a region that are maybe having joint meetings. That's been also very exciting. And they're talking about their experiences, either in studies or if they're participating. I think that's always very useful. I'm very excited at the what I see behind the scenes with the companies that are working to bring these therapies to clinical trials.
Right.
And I think that really excites me, because there's whole teams. It's not just, all right, we're looking at sites. There's whole teams that are looking at what are the best outcome measures, and and some of the companies are even worth talking to each other, even though technically they're competitors.
Yeah.
They're working because we may need multiple treatments to address FSHD. FSHD is heterogeneous. So just like cholesterol drugs, there's, you know, five or six of them on the market, and they all, you know, some people respond better to others. So having all of these options, I think, is a really, really great thing. So, you know, I'm very hopeful, and I think that participation, just being aware of what's coming around and what's being done, is very important. And just the way you do that is by engaging. Mm. And so just being tapped into to the local chapter with other people, and to you know, attend meetings to hear what's happening and asking questions, that's just being involved, I think, is very empowering. So
I like that. I like that. That's a great way to answer that. There's nothing wrong with that. You're speaking from your heart. That's good. That's good. That's exactly what we needed. That's exactly what we needed. Yes. Because, you know, that the connection equals the fundraising events, and that's community. Hence, you know, when the grants come, right, they're looking for money, you know, to help, right? So it's you got to feed the machine, and we all have to be a part of it, whatever that part you can do. We love the part that you're doing, right? This is great. All the information you've given us today, all the things you've talked to us about, we're going to definitely have to have you back on again. So I hope you don't mind doing these interviews.
Not at all. I'm delighted. And if you've developed already a theme song or something,
yes.
I'm happy to do that.
Oh yeah. Yes. Next time you're on. Yeah. That's how it's going to be. And we'll do like the regular intro and all, but it'll be like, now we have, you know, Man, we're gonna really jazz it up. Definitely. Next time you're on, be ready. It's gonna be big.
Thank you so much, Tim. It's been a privilege, and anytime you'd like me to, you have any questions yourself, or you want me to join in, I'd be happy to.
Awesome. Thanks, Jamshed. Appreciate it. You take care.
Thank you. You too.
That's Mr. Jamshed Arjemand. He is Chief Science Officer of the FSHD Society. We're going to take a quick break and hear from a couple of our sponsors, and we'll be on the other side of the break with some events and what's going on in the FSHD Society. Today's FSHD Society radio show is sponsored by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum is a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, advancing new medicines that target the root cause of genetically defined rare diseases such as FSHD and sickle cell disease. Fulcrum's approach to drug discovery combines insights from patients with rare diseases with the most advanced tools to identify and develop therapeutics that will target the root cause. For several years, Fulcrum has been honored to work with the FSHD community in efforts to build awareness of the impact of FSHD on individuals and families. Fulcrum works in partnership with leaders from the patient advocacy and medical communities to highlight the impact of rare diseases and support continued research. You can connect with Fulcrum on LinkedIn and follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FulcrumTX. Today's podcast is sponsored by PerkinElmer Genomics, a market leader in biochemical and genomic testing solutions. PerkinElmer Genomics understands that obtaining a confirmed genetic diagnosis for FSHD can be a difficult and frustrating experience for both patients and their families. That's why their laboratory prides itself on launching new and innovative technologies to help families find answers that they are looking for. Just over a year ago, PerkinElmer Genomics introduced the first new diagnostic approach to FSHD type 1 genetic testing in nearly three decades. This testing has drastically decreased the time to diagnose while increasing accessibility to patients. Knowing the underlying cause of FSHD can have important implications for the entire family, including help with future medical management decisions. Speak with your provider today and learn more about how you can get testing. Visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com to find out more about available testing options for FSHD and other related neuromuscular disorders that may help you and your family today. That's PerkinElmerGenomics.com. Oh, welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. A special thank you to our sponsors and our guests today. That was Jamshed Arjemand, and he is the Chief Science Officer of the FSHD Society. And yes, next time he's on, we're going to share that really fun intro I created for him, the Jammin' with Jamshed. I think a reoccurring guest is in order. So what I need you to do, if we're going to do that, I'd love you to fill my email inbox, and I want you to go and send me some questions, and we'll start loading those up. Send me those at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. send me those emails, and I just want you to put in the title of that email, Jammin', or Jammin' with Jamshed. That would be great, so we know that those are the questions that you would ask him. We'll get those building up, and then we'll get him back on and have a segment with him. So thank you for him. Now let's talk a little bit about the events coming up. Ton of stuff coming up. I know we're in June as you're watching this show. And on June 12th, FSHD 360 is out there. The University of Florida, Gainesville is hosting that. That is an amazing event. You can already find the conferences out there. Everything is detailed out by the minute, it appears. The whole deal, we got genetics of FSHD, the role of the genetic with a genetic counselor, advances in genetic testing technology, rehabilitation, and FSHD. Their imaging, we're talking about that. A lot of things we even talked about today are going to be within this University of Florida Gainesville virtual FSHD 360 conference. I believe you do have to RSVP. That is sponsored by Avidity Biosciences and Perkin Elmer Genomics, who is one of our sponsors as well, so thank you to them. On June 13th, from 12 to 3 p.m., the Aloha FSHD Barbecue in Luau, Central Park East, in the Picnic Shelter. So take a look at that. I think that's the Colorado area, I believe. Check out fshdsociety.org to know more there. June 14th gives you the Wellness Hour, 5 to 6 p.m. Sign up at fshdsociety.org under the events calendar. That's always a good thing to have. I think that's a reoccurring. June 17th from 1 to 2 p.m., FSHDU with Tahsin Muzaffar. He is an MD, and he's the chair of neurology at the University of California, Irvine, and learn about the clinical trials, the scientific process by which researchers determine whether a new therapy is safe, and so much more. And you can learn all about that. That is happening on June 17th, 1 to 2 p.m. Check that out. So we got that down for you. This is how all the magic happens. That's how all the magic happens. More events coming your way. June 18th, the Canyon Rim Park. This is the Utah chapter, I believe. Yes, hosted by Allison Calder of the Utah chapter. It is the Canyon Rim Park East Pavilion. Be there at 6 o'clock to 8:30 p.m. There'll be food, music, games. Oh, sounds like a lot of fun. Man, it's a long ride from Wisconsin, but that'd be worth it, I think. It is the Utah Reconnect, June 18th. Come and join them. A lot of Reconnect meetings here, and I think this is fantastic, even virtually, but the face-to-face, the in-person is starting to kind of build up more and more in certain areas. So, you know, please find some of these close to you and reconnect. The Pacific Northwest Chapter, Sip and Share, June 19th, 3 to 4:30 Pacific Time. Two virtual venues. It's a mixology with Susie, and Share and Show Art with Selena. That sounds like a lot of fun. That's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah. And then moving forward, that's on the 19th. And then we all know that June 20th is the FSHD World Day, right? So do whatever you can to kind of celebrate that day. Tell me, you know, I'd love to hear how you guys are doing that. Send me your pictures via email, whatnot. I'd love to hear how you're all doing that. On that day, we're going to have the best of the FSHD Society Radio Show interviews throughout the day. So we're going to kind of blast from the past and some of those great shows. So I look forward to that, kind of hopping in and out throughout the day. They're going to air some of those great, great interviews with some great guests. Also on the June 20th, Atlanta chapter is celebrating that day with, at the Grub Kitchen and Bar. Watch the King and Queen Building light up orange at 7:30 PM to 9:30 PM. They're going to arrive at 7:30 at the Grub Kitchen and Bar and, learn more about exactly where that is, especially if you're near the Atlanta near the Atlanta chapter on the 20th, and figure out how to get there. So let's take a quick break here before we continue with our events and then close up shop. I want to kind of give some credit to one more sponsor. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thank you. FSHD Radio is sponsored by Dyne Therapeutics, a muscle disease company focused on advancing innovative, life-transforming therapeutics for people living with genetically driven diseases. Dyne is developing a broad portfolio of therapies for muscle diseases, including programs in facioscapulohumeral muscular dystrophy, myotonic dystrophy type 1, and Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Utilizing its proprietary FORCE platform, Dyne is developing modern oligonucleotide therapeutic candidates designed to overcome limitations in delivery to muscle. For more information, please visit dyne-tx.com and follow Dyne on LinkedIn and Twitter. Welcome back to the show. Thank you to our sponsors, Perkin Elmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapeutics, Therapies, for being our sponsors. So glad they are aboard on the show. It's so exciting not just to have one sponsor, but to have three, especially within this world of FSHD. Wanted to continue with the events before I get farther into that. I didn't want to forget this special event. On June 15th, you know, our own George Pollack is doing the Race Across the West from and with his FSHD cycling team. So follow them on Facebook, probably on Twitter as well, definitely through FSHDSociety.org as they embark on yet another cycling event. They're going to go from, I think, California to Colorado. Might have a bonus episode in the making. Could be audio only with George. I want to kind of maybe quickly sit and chat with him and release that episode before the race starts so you know how to support him and the race team for FSHD Society. I wanted to make sure I talked about that here. June 24th, as we continue on with our events, 10 to 2 Eastern, presented virtually the 28th Annual International Research Congress Day 1 and 2. You can register for that. June 29th, the Caregiver Sharegiver Hour. I always love that group because I think it's an area that we always need to address those that help take care of us, so they can take care of each other a little bit. 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, it's a monthly meeting where they share their experiences and challenges, tips, support, and so much more. Join the Caregiver Sharegiver Hour in June on the 29th, 8 to 9 p.m. July, we enter in. July 6th, South Carolina virtual meeting. 8 to 9 p.m., our own Frank Hanley, the chapter director. We had him on once before talking about Qigong and how to relax and meditation. So maybe you can pick his brain on that as well, right? That would be kind of fun. That'd be kind of fun. And let's see here. Then we can move forward a little bit into our month of July. Past the 4th already, right? Trying to get you news and events going on up to the next show. The Wellness Hour on July 12th, join for that. July 13th is the FSHD radio show again. We're going to have Paul Bronson on. He's from the UK. He's got an interesting life. I call it an unordinary life, and he's done a lot of great things despite the fact he battles FSHD like so many of us do. An inspiring story and conversation with Paul Bronson. July 13th is the New England chapter. They are having a meeting from 5 to 6 p.m. East at the Wellstone Update Meeting with Dr. Lawrence Hayward of the UMass Wellness Center. News from the 2021 FSHD International Research Congress with Q&A will be discussed there as well. Wow, that's a lot of information, and I'm glad I could take the time to bring that to you guys. And it's always fun to chat and to get on air with you, even though this has been a little stretch of some pre-recorded shows out there. I'm sure at this moment possibly coming home from a baseball game, so I appreciate that you can live with the pre-recorded shows. And we have another one of those coming up as we talk to Paul for next month's show. That's the July episode, as he's across the pond in the UK, so probably best we pre-record that one too, or someone's going to be waking up in the middle of the night, right? Anyhow, so thank you all for being here. Thank you to our sponsors. Once again, Perkin Elmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapies. You want to find out more about this show or a chapter you can join or other events that we talked about, you want to maybe learn a little more how you can get involved, visit fshdsociety.org. Send me those emails. It's never a bother. I'd love to hear from my listeners. That's how I actually got in contact with our guests coming up in July. So reach out to me, fshdradio at fshdsociety.org. Thank you all for being here and everything you do. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.